Okay. It is March 13th, 2017. Shushan Purim. Tesvav Adar Tavshanayin Zayin. And it's Halacha Day of Perek Chaf Dalet. And there is an interesting pasuk here that caught my eye. The pasuk tells us in Perek Chaf Dalet, pasuk Yud Beis. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Alei Alei Ahara V'Yisham, V'nei Lecha Es Aluchus Ha'Even. Stand there and I'm going to give you the stone tablets. V'HaTorah V'HaMitzvah. The Torah and the Mitzvah, Asher Kasafti Lahorusam, which I'm going to write there for you to teach. So the Gemara Bavli, Brachos Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis, says, Ah, Minayin Lebirchas HaTorah Minatorah. How do we know that the idea that somebody makes Birchas HaTorah, right, Brachos before one begins learning, how do we know that that's a biblical obligation, Minatorah? So Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Nasan, HaReza Omer, it says, Uveirachta Es Hashem Elokecha Ayar Satova Asher Nasan Lach. It says Hashem, this is the pasuk by Benching, that Hashem will bless you the land, the good land, which will Asher Nasanach, which will be given to you. Uksiv ve'etnalacha es luchos ha'even va'torah va'mitzvos. And it also says, and Hashem will give you these luchos ha'even and the Torah and the mitzvos. So the understanding then is based on a kind of a gzeir shava tenu, that just as we make a bracha when one after one eats, so too we're going to make a bracha before one learns. That's at least one of the limudim. That's one of the deductions that the Gemara makes in order to say that the Birchas HaTorah is a din d'oraisa. So Birchas HaTorah is a very important thing. The Gemara actually says that it's one of the reasons, gives it as one of the reasons that the second base of Midgash was destroyed. The Gemara says during the second base of Midgash, and everybody was acting so wonderful, and there were no problems of Gila, Rai, Shvichus, Damim, or Avodah Zarah, all those things were out of the picture. Why would the second base of Midgash be destroyed? And the Gemara says because they didn't make a bracha before they learned. And there's a whole literature as to what that's talking about and how that fits in with other reasons that are given for the destruction of the second base of Migdash, but that's not for now. There is a further question as to, so does that actually mean that Birchas HaTorah is a din d'oraisa? Is that true? That Birchas HaTorah is really a din d'oraisa? So some of us had, was it you that we had a discussion about if you're going to cancel out one of the 613 mitzvos, then you have to add in others? No, we didn't have that recently? We had that discussion recently. Okay, so this is one of those examples. The Rambam does not include Birchas HaTorah as one of the 613 mitzvos. The Ramban, however, if you look in the, I could have brought it with me, but the Ramban, if you take a Sefer Mitzvos of the Rambam, so in a standard edition, there is the Rambam's list of his mitzvos. He divides it up into positive mitzvos and negative mitzvos. And after the positive mitzvos, as well as after the negative mitzvos, the Ramban says that these are the mitzvos that the Rambam left out. Now, how could the Rambam left that out? It comes out with 613. We know there's 613. It's a Gemara in Masechta Makos. So the answer is that the Ramban says that there are things that the Rambam had that he thinks are not mitzvos. Right? So he comes out with his own cheshbon. So one of the things that the Ramban adds that the Rambam didn't have is this mitzvah, the mitzvah of saying Birchas HaTorah, making a bracha before one learns. That's one of the things that the Ramban adds. Now, the fact that the Rambam does not have it, does that mean that the Rambam does not include it as one of the as a din d'oraisa? Well, not necessarily. Just because it's a biblical obligation does not necessarily mean that it has to be one of the 613 mitzvahs, right? You could say that it's an obligation subsumed within the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, which the Rambam certainly does have.
The 613, is that included when it says the mitzvah? It says
HaTorah
v'Hamitzvah. So
yeah.
So the 613 fall under the category of mitzvah, of commandment?
613 mitzvos, right.
So the HaTorah is just learning? So it could be included.
Well,
in that.
This is not necessarily, no. It's not learned out from the idea that it says Torah mitzvah. The idea that it says Torah mitzvah in this is really just a descriptive thing about what Moshe was given. The idea of 613 mitzvahs comes from elsewhere. That comes from Torah tzivalanu Moshe Moshak Yilas Yaakov. That Hashem taught us the Torah tzivalanu. That Moshe taught us 600 and Torah in the Gematria is 611, not 613, but 611 plus the first two of the Aseret Divros, so therefore we come at the 613. That's what the Gemara learns out. So 613 mitzvos, that we know. We just don't know what are the 613 mitzvos, or what construct we use in order to come up with that number, right? So Torah, however, Torah might be you know, outside, besides the list of mitzvos, which is 3 pages long, there's also the rest of Torah. So Torah and mitzvos were all given, yeah. It's different than before Shem understand what this Torah means. It probably means, the way Rashi understood it was, it's the Torah, everything from Parshas Bereishis until Parshas Yisro, or Parshas Mishpatim. That was all given at this point. Okay, so where was I? So there are a bunch of Rishonim, however, or there are the many that suggest that many Rishonim don't assume that it's a Din D'oraisa, that it was a biblical commandment, that it's really only a Din D'Rabbanan. They claim that the Rambam didn't hold that from the fact that the Ramban fights the Rambam on it, and the fact that the Rambam never explicitly says, in the Rambam's description of Birchas HaTorah, he never says it's a Din D'oraisa. He just says there's this idea of doing Birchas HaTorah. So they suggest that the Rif and the Rush, also the halachic works, never quote it as a d'oraisa. They just say there is such an idea. They don't put it. They don't give you the source. You know, defining it as a d'oraisa. So there are many. There are those that suggest that it's not a that it's not biblical in nature. Rather, it's only rabbinic. Aye, what about the fact that there's psukim that the Gemara attempts to prove it from verses in the Torah? Yeah, that's what we call an esmachta. An esmachta is kind of a hint from the Torah, that we have things that we learn or we see hints for in the Torah, but that does not necessarily give it the full weight of being a biblical obligation. So how do we paskin? Is it a din d'oraisa or is it a din d'rabbanan? So what does it matter? I mean, we are as Orthodox Jews, we keep dine d'oraisa as well as dine d'rabbanan, biblical as well as rabbinic commandments. So what would be a difference whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? Why should we care? In terms of, other than we should just know things, but other than that, why would it make a practical difference whether it's biblical or whether it's rabbinic? So the answer to all, whenever that question is asked, the answer is always, well, what do you do in the case of a suffik? Suffik is a question. Suffik, we have one rule, suffik d'oraisa l'chumra, and we have another rule, suffik d'rabbanan l'kula. That if it's a biblical obligation, we would always rule stringently, and if it's a rabbinic obligation, we would always rule leniently. So the question would come up by Birkas HaTorah, what about if you're not sure whether you made Birkas HaTorah that morning or not? Does one be required to make it or not? So I'm not sure if Shulchan Aruch deals with that case explicitly. In Shulchan Aruch, Simon Mem Zayin Sif Aleph, in the beginning of the section on Birkas HaTorah, he says the following halacha, Birkas HaTorah tzarech li zahir ba ma'od. You have to be very careful about Birkas HaTorah. So does that tell you it's a din d'oraisa, or does it tell you it's a din d'rabbanan? It doesn't really tell you anything. But the Mishnah Berura, their comments, yeah, see the Shagasari, the Masik Shabirchas HaTorah Hu Min HaTorah. V'lachin im nistapik lo im beirach Birchas HaTorah, therefore if you're not sure whether you made Birchas HaTorah or not, chozer umavarich. You should go back and make the bracha again because we're not sure. And we call makom kevin shehu lo safek lo yivarech ala birchas asher bachar. But of course, it's a bit of a question. You should only make one bracha. You should make all of them, and you should minimize how much brachas you make, etc. So the Mishnah Berurah seems to be assuming. That it's d'oraisa, but then he goes and quotes others to say that no, maybe it's only d'rabbanan. Therefore, you rule leniently. He says, try to be very careful about saying Birkas HaTorah in the right time and don't get into this situation. So it kind of leaves it as a question whether it really is d'oraisa, as the Gemara seems to say black and white, or some knock away from it and say, no, it doesn't really mean d'oraisa. It means that it's very important and it's a smach that could be hinted in the Torah, but we don't paskin shilas about it with the full force of it being a biblical obligation. So anyways, that's idea number one, which I didn't really want to talk to. But I really want to talk about, I really wanted to get to the next little comment that is made here in the Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima quotes from Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi in Brachos Perek Vavalach Aleph states the following things. Tanya, minayin lemitzvos shetu'unos bracha. How do we know in general that mitzvos require a bracha? Not Birchas HaTorah, not Birchas HaMazon. Generally, right? When one puts a mezuzah on the door, so you make a bracha for a mezuzah. When one hears the Megillah, Shekhi Shan Savit Sivan al Mikra Megillah, right? So where do we know that one makes brachos on mitzvos? So Amar of Tanchuma B'Shem Rabbi Elazar, Ksiv V'Torah V'HaMitzvah. It says Torah V'HaMitzvah in this pasuk in Mishpatim. Hekish mitzvah to Torah. We connect mitzvah to Torah. Ma Torah to una bracha. Af mitzvah to una bracha. Just as the Torah itself requires a birchas HaTorah, so too all mitzvahs should require a birchas HaTorah. So the truth is, right, we got that? That's based on this pasuk, we say, that's the idea of making birchas hamitzvah, a bracha on a mitzvah. Just as the Torah, we know, requires birchas haTorah, so too all mitzvahs should require brachos. Now, the truth is, if you take 2 plus 2, and you would assume that 2 plus 2 would equal 4, that would mean the following. That would mean that every bracha we make is a din d'oraisa. Right? That's what it sounds like. Hekesh is a real limud. That's one of the ways that we're darshaning the Torah. If we assume that Birchas HaTorah is d'oraisa, and then we assume that we connect Birchas HaTorah to other brachos, that should mean that all brachos are d'oraisa. However, nobody holds that way. Nobody says that. The Rambam explicitly says that Birchas HaMitzvos have the standing of being a din d'rabbanan. So why would that be? So if you assume that Birchas HaTorah really is d'oraisa, so you have to say that this hekesh is only an asmach, there's only like a loose connection. If you assume that really Birchas HaTorah is not a din d'oraisa, so probably you would assume this also isn't a din d'oraisa. Or you could also assume that this Bavli disagrees with the Yerushalmi, that the Bavli holds that Birchas HaTorah is d'oraisa, the Yerushalmi holds it's not, that's why you can make that connection, but that connection wouldn't exist if you assume that Birchas HaTorah is actually d'oraisa. Either way, it is an interesting line that the Yerushalmi says here, that this pasuk is actually a source, not perhaps not a source with the full weight of a biblical obligation, but it is a source for saying birchas hamitzvah, for saying brachos before one does a mitzvah.
Is birchas haTorah, where is that a derived?
So one suggestion is it's patterned off of benching. Right. So it says, just as benching says, it says, you will bless Hashem for the good land that He gave you. It says here, Vetna lecha es luchos. He'll give you the luchos. So just as it says tain there, we thank Him for it, so too we'll say tain here. And the Gemara actually develops a kal v'chomer. If you thank Hashem for chayisha, for living for a little bit, for living in this world, kal v'chomer you should thank Him for chay olam, that you'll have everlasting life. That's one of the limuds. That's one of the learnings that the Gemara there has. The Gemara also has quotes it from a pasuk, Kishim Hashem Akrav Godel Eloheinu, as Hashem, which is a pasuk in Parshas Zinu, I'm pretty sure. Shem Hashem Ekra, you call out to Hashem, this is the greatness of Hashem, meaning as we pronounce the learning of Hashem, we have to pronounce Hashem's greatness as well, which might also be a source for Birchas HaTorah. But this Yerushalmi then says, okay, so we have the idea of saying Birchas HaTorah. There is another, the Gemara itself, the Gemara Bavli has another idea of saying Birchas HaTorah. I accidentally forgot to bring the Gemara in, but the pasuk says by Vidui Meiser, it says, I forgot the language exact, it says, Vidui Meiser, it says, I hereby bringing all my Meiser, and lo shachachti, and I didn't forget anything. So what's the extra learning? So the Gemara says, not only did you bring it all, but you also made a bracha on bringing it. You also remembered Hashem as you're bringing it. So the Gemara there has that concept, although again, that wouldn't necessarily be an obligation that all mitzvos require a bracha beforehand, but the Gemara has that concept, at least it's patterned after biblical Torah verses. So we have that idea, saying Birchas HaTorah. The next concept, we turn to the bottom of the Torah Tamimah, the Torah Tamimah himself. The Torah Tamimah himself says, you know, it's interesting. If we take a look at various brachos, various mitzvos, so we say brachos on a lot of them. We say brachos on Megillah, Mezuzah, Tefillin, Tzitzis, Talis, Kiddush, and for Shabbos, what?
Washing
candle. Yeah, there's a whole bunch that we do. But then, if you think about it, there's a whole bunch that we don't. So, for what's the most obvious mitzvah that we don't? What's the first thing that comes to people's mind of a mitzvah? A positive mitzvah that we don't make a bracha on?
Eating.
Staka. That's a good example. Staka is what many of the Rishonim pick up on, that you don't make a bracha on staka, right? So why don't you make a bracha on tzedakah? So,
Because you don't know completed.
Ah, so that's the second answer. That's not the Torah Tamimah's answer. The Torah Tamimah's answer is as well, because let's think about this for a second. What does the word, what does the bracha mean? Asher kidishanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu, that you have hereby sanctified us with the mitzvos that you have commanded us. So ask the Torah Tamimah, is tzedakah really something that we as the Jewish people are sanctified under? Not really, because all nations really have this idea of giving tzedakah. And then he kind of extends that to mitzvos benan l'chaveru, that most of mitzvos involving chesed, mitzvos involving kindness to one another, giving a loan to another person, doing those kinds of things, are mitzvos that everybody should be doing. So yes, it's true, we have a mitzvah. And yes, it's true that we even add on to that we shouldn't be, we should have in mind when we do these mitzvahs that we're not just doing these mitzvahs because we think it's the nice, moral, correct thing to do, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to do it. That is a good thing to have. But we can't really say that we're designating ourselves as sanctified, as people of the commandment, so clearly when we do these mitzvahs that it's appropriate to make a bracha on it. So that's the Torah Tamimah's reason as to why we don't do this. She'ina noegin be'umos, ma she'enki b'mitzvot sh'minon l'chaveru, ke'ela she'chashavnu harehein noegos gam be'umos, that we think that these are also noeg by the other people. V'lo shayech al ze'a asher kishan mitzvosav, therefore it doesn't make sense to say asher kishan that we're sanctified with your mitzvos. Kolomar shehivdi lanu, as if to say that we're hereby separate. Acharei she'ina n'muvdalim behem, b'shari umos hamitukanos. For we are not really separating from the other nations, so therefore we're not going to make this particular bracha. That's the idea that the Aruch HaShulchan has. Interestingly enough, this idea as well is quoted, not quoted, but written by his father. Who is the Torah Tamimah's father? Anybody know? The Aruch HaShulchan. Come across the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan is the Torah Tamimah's father, and he has at the very, very end of the Aruch HaShulchan, like the very not the penultimate sif in Choshen Mishpat, he starts talking about brachos, which brachos you make a bracha on, which brachos you don't make a bracha on, and he has this point, and he says when it comes to mitzvahs and adam l'chaveru, such as these things, tzedakah and being kind to one another, etc., you don't make a bracha because those aren't things that separate us from the other nations. It's considered something that we should do based on our seichel, or one would do anyways based on your seichel, even if one did not have a bracha explicitly from Hashem. Now there is the reason that Sam mentioned before, is from the Rashba. Is a tshuva, is famously known as a tshuva of the Rashba. For some reason, in the Encyclopedia Talmudis, in the heading under Birchas HaMitzvah, it quotes it in the name of the Tshuvas Ben Pelet. I don't even know what that is. And I didn't see him quote the Rashba in here at all, but he quotes that idea, that that any mitzvah that I require another person to do, so I won't make a bracha on it, because what am I going to do? I'll make the bracha. Asher kishan zav tzivanu litein tzedakah. And then I'm about to give the money to the other person, where it says, oh, I'm good. I don't need it. Someone else already gave me the money. Something happens. If you need another person to agree to accept it, so you can't make a bracha on it. That's the suggestion that he that made. Also quoted the name of the Rashba. I've seen as well a third reason that seems to go along those lines. It might be in the Rashba. I didn't get a chance to see the Rashba, so I might also be there. That if, let's say, there's somebody asking me for money for tzedakah, and I say, oh, okay, here. Oh, wait. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Hashem Shabbat Shabbat tzedakah. Ah, okay, here you go. Right, so it kind of takes away a little bit of the chesed aspect from it. So that's another reason not to have the bracha as part of it. Now, there is an interesting discussion here in the Encyclopedia Talmudis where he says that there are a couple of mitzvos that are tole b'das acherim that we do make a bracha on it. Now, I don't expect many people here to think of them because they aren't too common, but one he says is the mitzvah of chalitza, that when we do a chalitza, you make a bracha. What is a chalitza?
Marriage.
What?
Marriage
of the brother. Right, but Yibum is the marriage. Yibum is when you actually go through with it. And Chalitz is when you don't. Right, the thing involving the shoe. So there you would make a bracha, even though you need the other person's agreement to be part of it. So why do we do that? So he says, so who does he quote here? No, that's the wrong page. Um, He says, "V'nisuin afin tulin v'dasachem." Shema timna ha'isha v'lo tir. So you nasei lo that mikol makom mevarchim aleihem lefi shazuhi mitzvah shel chovus hamutel sal ish mitzad atzma. He says that yes, it's true that that the woman could back away, but it still is a chiv on behalf of the man in order to do it. Now it's a little unclear. I wasn't able to work out who's making the bracha and who's the one that could back out, etc. But there we have an example where both should be there. Beis Din is suggesting that both do this act, and therefore you're going to make a bracha, even though technically another person could back out. Now he what?
You say there is a bracha.
He says a bracha is made. I've never been present. No, we do do chalitza.
We always do chalitza.
We would always do chalitza. Well, whenever you're in the situation where a person dies, where a man dies childless, in theory, you should attempt to do chalitza. We attempt to do chalitza, unless maybe the guy doesn't have a brother, or, yeah. I have a friend who, he's a rabbi of a shul, and elderly people in the shul came to him, an elderly man, says, oh, I found somebody, I'm planning on getting married. You know, will you be my Messiah condition? And he was like, he asked me, like, is there any, like, issues here? Like, should I be thinking of anything? It's like, I don't know, maybe you should check whether previous marriage and whether there was a get given, whether there are chalitza, you know. There are a couple of details that one has to look into when some of these things come up. But yeah, no, it's rare. It's pretty rare for, I've never seen a chalitza take place. I've been, you know, hanging around Beis Din's for a little while. It doesn't come up that often, but they do come up. They do come up. My secretary in Phoenix had a chalitza before I moved there. She was married. She never had children. Her husband died, and she had a chalitza. And she consequently got remarried. What?
The special shoe.
Yeah, but Rabbi Brisman has one. Rabbi Brisman had. There have been chalitzas done here in Philadelphia.
She could not get married without a chalitza.
Right, she would not be able to get married without a chalitza. Yeah.
She's bonded to the
brother of her former husband, yeah.
Has to be obviously a single brother.
No, not necessarily, because in theory he could have multiple wives. I mean, on a biblical level, that brother could marry multiple wives. So, you know, a chalitza would still need to be done. There are big questions, big shilas about... in the past several decades, even about, let's say, somebody got out of Russia or something, got married and then died without having kids, and now his brother is in the middle of Russia someplace. What do you do in that situation? But these are serious issues that come up. Yeah.
I thought that was to carry on the name. If the brother's already married and has kids, why would you do?
No, it's to carry on the
name of the deceased.
The deceased. To carry on the deceased's name.
Not the family name. He has the same family name.
No, it's not about the last name. No, it's about that guy. That guy should have his name carried on. But anyways, he has the flip side. So, okay, well, wait a second. What about the mitzvah of Kivud Aveim? The mitzvah of Kivud Aveim is also a mitzvah that one should do. And it is Tola B'das Acherim, but yet the father could turn him down. So we don't make a bracha Kivud Aveim. We don't say Kivud Aveim and give him water. So why is it by chalitza we'll make the bracha, by Kivud Aveim we won't make the bracha? So whatever, it's a discussion. It's by chalitza, it's a mitzvah on both of them. They should both do it. By the mitzvah of Kivud Aveim, there's no mitzvah on the father to do it. The mitzvah of the father is just there. The father could allow kivud to happen, but he has the right to be mochel and not require that the kivud take place. In which case, there's nothing incumbent upon him. Anyway, so that takes care of the idea of no mitzvahs on ben adam l'chavero. Oh wow, we're running through our time here. Yes.
To the chalitza, it's to keep the brother has to marry the widow, right?
The brother should marry the widow to keep the dead person's name alive.
How does it keep the dead person's name?
Because it's true that the child that's going to be born is going to be
Ben.
Right.
It's going to be Ben the brother.
No, it will be. We'll call it Ben the brother. But remember, we learned this last year when we learned the story of Yehuda and Tamar. There was a Ramban there where the Ramban discusses the Kabbalist, the mystical ideas behind Ibam. Okay. So check it out there.
I'm just confused about the family name, keeping the family name alive versus keeping the deceased's name alive.
Yeah, we'll be keeping the deceased's name alive, even though, yes, that boy is going to be born. He's going to be known as Ben, his biological father. Still, it's he's kind of associated then with the father. He's the Yibum baby.
The family.
Halacha doesn't recognize last names. We don't have an idea of last names in Halacha.
And last names are for the last couple centuries.
Right.
He's a spiritual descendant.
Yeah, right. He's considered a spiritual descendant of the father, yeah. Two other ideas wanted to mention very quickly. Number one is the idea of overly asiyasan, doing it beforehand, that we have all brachos one makes overly asiyasan. There is a idea that has come into vogue the last couple hundred years in the Hasidish world of doing l'shem yichuds, of l'shem yichud, that we kind of gather our kavanos beforehand, then we make the bracha. Right? If you look in most sederim, so before lulav, so there's a whole paragraph to say, or before tefillin, there's a whole paragraph to say. So the minhag in Beth HaMedrash is not to say any of those things. The Vilna Gaon was against, it was a more of a Hasidish practice. The Vilna Gaon was anti, the Noda B'Yehuda was viscerally anti. The Noda B'Yehuda has a tshuva in Ma'adure Kama, in Yoredeya Ma'adure Kama Simen Tzadi Gimel, where he says some not nice things about those that say it. Ra'iladati Zera Chol, this is like the, this is the demonstration of the illness of our generation, that people don't do the mitzvah, that the mitzvahs aren't good enough for them anymore, they have to do these other things, etc. He has a very interesting line here, where he says, where is the line? He says, Valdor, and he's talking about the Hasidim. The Hasidim were the ones who would say this. So he says, Valdor hayosam hazeh ani omer, with this orphan generation, I say the verse, Yisharim darchei Hashem, mitzadikim yelchu behem, that straight are the ways of Hashem, tzadikim should follow it. And the way the pasuk goes, uposhim yikashluvam, uposhim are sinners will fall on that path. You know, just follow the halacha. You don't have to add in these newfangled ideas. But the Noda B'Yehuda in his tshuva added the idea of chasidim, added the word chasidim yichashluvam. Rather than saying poshim yichashluvam, he says chasidim yichashluvam. That the chasidim are falling in these matters. So the story goes is that that's a pretty harsh thing to do, to to say the chasidim are all a bunch of sinners. So the way the story goes, is when they wanted to reprint for the second edition of the Sefer, they either went to him or they went to his kids. There's different versions of how the story went. They wanted to reprint, they said maybe we should change it, maybe we should take out the word chasidim, put in the word potion like the pasuk actually says. Of course the tshuva wouldn't make any sense then, but it would make a little bit ew, but maybe we should switch it. So the story goes that somebody commented, either him, his kid, or one of the rebbes or something that they asked, said no, like that would mean that the Noda B'Yehuda took sinners and turned them into chasidim, while you're taking chasidim and turning them into sinners. That's the, all right. Anyways, so that is some of the big machlokas behind the idea of saying l'shem yichud, whether it is or isn't. Me being a descendant of the Noda B'Yehuda, I don't say any of those things. Okay, one other thing I wanted to just share, and that is the Noda B'Yehuda does have a very famous comment when it comes to washing, that washing netilas yadayim. So in Shulchan, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it says Mevarech Kodem Netila Shekol Mitzvos Mevarech Over Le'Asiyasim. It says you should make a bracha before Netilas Yadayim. As you get to the cup, you say Hashem Kishan Tzivan Al Netilas Yadayim, and then you wash your hands, which probably no one in this room does, right? Nobody. So I don't even know if Sfardim do this or not, but in Shulchan Aruch it says that you should make the bracha first. And then they say v'nag, and then the Shulchan Aruch continues as v'nag shelo levarach. Our minig is not to do it until afterwards. Why not? So there is an idea out there that when one does mitzvahs of purity, going to the mikvah or washing one's hands, that you should wait till afterwards to make the bracha, because maybe it's inappropriate to make the bracha before. That might all be patterned after a ger, that when a ger goes to the mikvah to convert, so they have a bracha to make a Shir Shana Savitz Ivanu. I'm not sure what they say, Al-Tavilas Ger or Lasos, to become a Ger, which they can't say before they've gone to the mikvah, because there's a necessary component missing, meaning they're Yiddishkeit. So therefore they make the bracha afterwards. So some then extend it to say, oh, so therefore just as a Ger makes the bracha after the mitzvah, so too, whenever we use a mikvah, maybe we should make the bracha after. That's also a machlokas, when a woman goes to the mikvah. So Sfardim have the minhag of saying the bracha before they go in, meaning they'll say the bracha and then go into the mikvah. Woman, Sephardic woman. And while Ashkenazim do it after. So Rav Sobolovsky, if I remember, told a story that He once got a call from his mikveh lady in the mikveh where he was the rabbi, saying there's a woman here who insists on making the bracha before she goes into the mikveh, and I told her that she can't do it because this is a Ashkenazi mikveh, and the minhag of this mikveh is that she has to make the bracha after she's gone to the mikveh. To which Rosalowski responded, I was saying, is she davening for the amud? Is she davening to be yotze the other women? So you don't have to worry about that. Everybody could follow their own minhag in that matter. So the same halacha then comes up with regards to, the question comes up with regards to washing, that somehow the minhag of doing it before, somehow the minhag of doing it afterwards. But the Nud Bihuda was very adamant, and very excited about this in a drasha once, where he says, I see everybody falters in this, that people think that you don't have to make the bracha until after you finish washing. He says, no, that's not the halacha. The halacha really is that you have to have the bracha connected to the washing. So as soon as one begins washing, all conversation must cease at that point. You have to stop talking. And he says, I see it all the time, that people will, even B'nai Torah I see do this, that they'll have their conversation, they'll wash while in the middle of the conversation, then they'll make the bracha, and then they'll be strict to be quiet until they make the hamotzi. He says, that's wrong. He says, the idea of not washing before you make, from the time you wash, not speaking from the time you wash until you make a bracha, until you make hamotzi, he says, that's a minhag, that's a, you know, no one will tell you that you have to go back and wash again. Yeah, that's not the halacha, that's a minhag. But the idea that you have to wash, that you can't speak between, from time you begin washing until you make the bracha, that's meikar adin. And if you would talk at that time, you would have to go and make, and wash again. So everybody messes this up, and and it's very important that everybody gets this straight. So I'll just share that along here, that make sure we all know this a lot. I saw somebody make that mistake this past Shabbos. Okay.